Turn this mother out.
Grinding the Garage. I'm Corey Cope.
I'm Freddie Woff.
We're continuing our, and we reframed it now. It's remakes people didn't ask for. And we changed it up a little bit. This is actually the third movie we watched. We watched another one and realized there wasn't much to talk about. So
let's not talk about it.
So we moved on to The Fog, which was on our short list to begin with. It got pushed off. It was originally part of our list. Right. And then ironically, I want to say, was the other one chosen over this one? I think did we pick it over this at the last little bit we were trying to pick? I don't know.
The Fog?
Yeah.
Or do we?
No.
We three that originally got scrapped that you won't hear. One of them would have been The Fog. The other one was the Omen remake.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And what was the other one? Straw Dogs.
Straw Dogs, yeah. And they're also
too
similar. They're all too similar.
Right.
And you can kind of guess what the other movie was based on that last one. Yeah. I'm glad we didn't actually do that one too, because it probably would have felt the same way. But anyway, woo, The Fog. Tom Welling, who is just at that beginning stages of Smallville, but they've been in three successful seasons. He's in the fourth. He shoots in Vancouver. This was shot all over Vancouver, not all over, but clearly in Vancouver, the island, of course. This movie is exactly the movie we talked about during the Dark Castle series.
Yeah.
Everybody is trying to do what they were doing. What's interesting about this one is everybody that was involved in the original Fog is back producing this one.
But when you say produce.
Yeah.
Does that mean they pay you money and give you a credit to stay away and just let them do what they want?
Yeah, because I don't think John Carpenter had much to do with this.
I don't think so either,
and unfortunately, man. Deborah Hill passed while she was making another movie, with Oliver Stone. So I couldn't find out how much she actually worked on this. I had to watch the movie on HBO Max, so I didn't have any extra materials to lean on to see how involved she was in the movie, like through EPK stuff. But I hadn't seen the movie before, and I thought I had, because I've seen the original so many times. But to get to this and to start the movie up and see a Deborah Hill production at the beginning, I'm like, oh, is that just a... I was like, oh, okay. And then to get to the end, and there's a memoriam slate for her. And I'm like, wait, did she... So I started doing research, and I just found out, you know, what I just said, that she had passed almost like she wasn't even on the movie. Like she passed before she got to set or something to that effect. I don't know. But like you noted, there's three people. It's John Carpenter, David Foster, and Deborah Hill. And David Foster, I'm pretty sure, wasn't around for the first one, the original.
No.
So I think he's the acting producer on the whole thing. And Carpenter is just doing what he's doing, like he's doing with the current Halloween series.
Sure, but less involved.
And instead of doing the music in that new series of Halloween movies, and this, Graham Revell handles the score. And it's all right. I mean, it fits. But this, like you noted, this feels like, hey, if the CW did movies,
sure,
this would be that,
right? I mean, that's the big knock on this movie. Like for me, it just looks like what was the Stephen King TV series that went on forever that had Eric Balfour on it? You know, it was on five seasons, like on the and they were on an island up in Nova Scotia. But that's what it felt like. It feels like any of those CW shows. It even looks like them. It looks like they just brought like the whole creative team, DP, everybody from you name the show, it's probably, they probably all worked on it. But it, you know, it just looks like CW circa 2005 TV show.
Yeah. Other than Tom Welling, this movie has like movie actors in it.
Sure.
You know, Maggie Grace has done a lot of television, but I mean, most people know
from Lost.
From Lost.
Liam Neeson's daughter.
And Liam Neeson's daughter, yeah.
Yeah. His 30-year-old, 18-year-old daughter.
And she did probably one of my favorite seasons of Californication.
Yeah. She's lovely, dude. I worked with her. She's super cool.
She's fine in this.
Yeah, she's good. I mean, she's not the problem. Like I said, like we said earlier, there's nobody's really bad in it. It's just, you know, some of the dialogue they have to expose.
Yeah.
Expunge.
Matthew Curry Holmes, who is in this, and he is known for being in lots of things, but Wrong Turn 2 is the first thing I had ever seen him in because I never saw this movie. And it was funny to see him in it because I don't think I've seen him in anything other than Lynch's movie. But he's fine in this, and he doesn't last very long like a lot of people do in this movie.
No, that's the one thing about this movie that it does. They do just start getting to the, you know, to the if you will, the killings. Pretty quickly, you know. I feel like it moves a little faster than the original.
Bet. Yeah, I agree. And the opening is a little confusing.
Yes.
You know, I know the original, and the opening is like, you're like, what the fuck is going on? Is this present day? I'm not a big fan. Don't spoon feed me, like, you know, don't put a slate up there and tell me what year it is, unless it's really important, like this opening.
Right.
I mean, I know, you know, but it's like, can you just tell me it's 1871 just for shits and giggles? No, they don't do that. But.
It's supposed to be the 100th year anniversary, right? So I guess it's 1905. Is what I was going with.
Oh, is it?
I mean, it was the 100th year anniversary of the whatever. That's what the statues were all about, right? I mean, that's what I was going with. So I'm just guessing it was 100 years earlier. But they don't give it. You don't get that until a few scenes later when there's that horrible statue reveal, that whole exposition.
If that's what it is, I'm really confused now because it was supposed to be 1871. If it's 100 years, oh, so
I know.
1971. That's even earlier than the original movie,
right?
And people got cell phones, so I'm really confused now.
I am totally confused. Was it supposed to be 1905? And it was 2005? I don't know, man.
Is it supposed to be 200 years? We're not even there yet. I don't know.
Yeah, it was 1612, pilgrims.
The setup's similar, you know, the fog and people got wronged and people come back for, ghosties come back for revenge. Pirate ghosts!
Pirate ghosts, but they're not even pirates in this.
No, and that's the...
They're not. They look like, you know, they look like the people from the Roanoke Lost Colony.
They do. And
right?
And then they do that one little homage to Blake, right? That at the of the original one where you can see his eyes across the fog at one point. But they only do it the one time. And then that was clever. And I think, again, but if you don't know the original, it doesn't do much for you.
Right. You're not knowing what that is.
But I'm glad if you saw this before you saw the original, good for you, because you it's a better movie out there for you.
Right.
But I didn't want to overlook Selma Blair because I was talking about, you know, movie stars or feature, I should say movie stars, but feature film actors. She's great in it. Like you're saying before you got on mic, she is, when is she not good?
Yeah, exactly.
She just recently, of course, has been involved because she got diagnosed with MS. A few years ago.
Yeah.
And I swear, like, there is no cooler person that I've ever met that is less deserving of such an awful thing. But in exactly all those things that I've known about her, the way she's handling MS and just going hard at it with a documentary and just documenting everything she's going through, knowing that it would help others. I'm like, dude, that's fucking rad. She's a cool chick. Always has been, no matter if you're watching an interview with her or seeing her perform, she's great. So it was fun seeing her. And the one complaint I have about her, she's not in the movie enough.
Right. Again, not unlike Adrian Barbeau in the original.
Right.
Right. There's not enough Stevie Wayne. You mostly, you're hearing Stevie Wayne's voice.
Yeah.
As opposed to ever, you know, she's locked in a lighthouse. So really, it's not too much she can do, I guess.
Right. And if there's one thing in there that I would have loved to have seen them deviate from the original is, all right, well, can I see Selma more?
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I think you do see her more than you see Adrian in the original.
You do.
At least away from the lighthouse. The effects overall, I mean, okay, first of all, thank God they spent the money properly on their CG fog, because you imagine the fog didn't look good in the fog.
Right. At least the fog looks good. I'll give it that.
Now, some of the fog budget needed extra funding at some point along the way before what they originally had estimated, because, again, as you were watching, you texted me, and of course, I was looking for it the entire time I was watching the movie. There's some great stunt gags in this from Fire Burns. Really good stuff.
Yeah.
And equally, the other way is there's mm-hmm. some less than stellar CG. And it was funny, too, because you can tell it's just being layered on top of real stuff.
Yes.
And that's why it's so noticeable.
Right. It's like you can tell where the practical fire ends and then where the enhanced, and it looks like, what is it? What was the old thing? After Effects on Apple.
Well, no, I mean, that's still heavily used today.
I know, but it looks like the 1998 version.
Yeah. It doesn't look good. Or 2005 version too.
I can't imagine it ever looked good. Like,
no.
I remember seeing this in the theater thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, dude, they're fucking that up.
Yeah.
It looks bad.
And unlike some of the movies that we're going to come across, this movie, like the other movies that we've covered, they all have a high production value because they're all studio movies. And that to get to that part where it just stands out so much, I almost feel like because you can see the practical flames because they stand out in contrast to the digital stuff they're putting in there. It looked like it was big enough fire. Look, it's a fire. I know it's a fire. I don't know. How big do you need to make it?
Yeah. You know, that's just some producer going, bigger, bigger.
Well, that's what's so funny about it. All you have to do, even back then, you could duplicate that part of this thing and just slide it over and flip it, and then it still would have been comped. It would have looked better than clearly the digital fire we were looking at.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Revolution, dude. I mean, when you say studio, it's from Revolution.
But it's
which, sure, they were a studio, but they, you know, if I went through it, I could name three movies from Revolution right now that you would laugh at when I said, you'd be like, oh God, yeah.
Well, I was really talking about Many Majors and like that, and those movies we were talking about on Kickstart recently.
This is like this is very much like the Ghost House movies, or what were they? Ghost House? Is that the one?
Ghost House, Dark Castle. They all kind of like
Dark Castle.
They're all in the same vein of budget.
Yeah.
I
was shocked that this was an $18 million movie.
Yeah. I thought that's why they got Tom Welling to begin with. It probably would have been 25 if they had somebody that's known to put seats in the theater.
My question is, where are you cheap bastards? Where's fucking Tom Atkins?
Yeah, like they couldn't afford to put
like
him
they couldn't
in
get a cameo for right. from Tom Atkins in this movie. Fuck you. He should have been the beachcomber. I'm serious. I'm being 100%. If you're going to do it, dude, if you're going to have that guy and everybody's looking at him anyway, because they're like, who's that under that wig and beard? And it's nobody. Nobody you give a shit about.
Right. And here's the thing. That last time when he sees the table and the chairs.
Duh. I laughed.
I go, wait, is that Rutger Hauer? Who is that?
Yes. It looked like Hobo with a shotgun on the beach.
It totally did. I'm like, wait, that can't. How would I miss him being in this movie? And wait, and if that is Rutger Hauer, you're disguising him too much.
Yeah. To me, that should have been Tom Atkins.
Yeah.
Or Tom Atkins could have been anywhere, dude. They could have just had him, they could have just had him drive by in his truck. You know, in one of those horrible scenes on the street.
Yeah.
It's a spyglass. It's not a telescope. It's a spyglass.
Nobody in this suffers from anything performance-wise other than it just being a script. It's the
words on the page.
Yeah, it's not great. And you can just tell anytime Maggie or Selma are on screen, they kind of elevate the stuff. Now, I thought it was an interesting choice for Tom Welling to play this part because he's in the middle. I mean, I shouldn't say the middle. He's in the fourth season of Smallville. He's Clark Kent. He's this good guy. I'm surprised. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to play a guy that's hitting these two chicks because I'm lonely on this island. And I actually, you know, did he only hook up with Selma because Maggie peaced out?
That's what he said. I mean, in that brief exchange between him and Gilligan, Gilligan and the skipper, if you will. Yes, that witty repartee. That's what you're led to believe, but they don't really ever give you any backstory. Like
no,
but hey, you know what? It's not important, really.
It's not.
I mean,
important.
All that's important is that we don't know why they're not pirates.
We don't know why they're not pirates, and
what year it is. When they sink.
And also, the other question is, what the fuck is Spooner doing in this movie?
Oh, I know, man. And weirdly enough, how is he the only one who survives the attack on the seagrass?
Yeah, because he's hiding in the freezer?
I guess. I mean, that's like what LL Cool J did against that shark in Deep Blue Sea, right? Hid in the fridge with a parrot.
Now, look, I've been on my fair share of fishing boats. And
yeah, me too. I've never seen a refrigerator quite that size.
Not that size. And why is it there? Usually it's in the deck floor.
Yes, right. Because so you don't want to bring the fish
down.
You don't want to drag
the fish in the galley. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
A movie about people living on an island and it's a fishing boat. I mean, it was very, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a build. That is no.
Definitely.
I don't know of any boat that would have that. Anyway.
Yeah.
But no, Dre Davis is fine in it. He's doing what he's been given to do like everybody else does in the movie. It's just like it doesn't. He's the standout on the island. He didn't grow up there, and it's clear that he didn't grow up there. In fact, just to make sure you know that later on, he tells you his family's from Chicago.
Yep. No confusion. That's why you don't see his family.
They were playing it for laughs, and it didn't make me laugh. And I'm like, I just went, yeah, no shit, dude.
Oh, really? Shocked. The things that they changed up in this movie, not for the better. I mean, I guess they were trying to make it a little more modernized. You know what I was really missing from this story was the beginning. I was missing John Houseman sitting around a campfire scaring children.
That would have been nice.
I mean, to me, that's like, you know, one of the most, that sets the whole tone of this.
There's lots of things about this movie that make you wonder. I know why it was made. You and I talked recently about some other movies from the 70s that got remade by their, you know, or at least produced by the people that were originally involved in it. And this was a time when, I mean, what else was Carpenter doing? I mean, at this time, nothing really.
Yeah. I mean, really the only thing he was Ghost of Mars sometime around this time.
Ghost of Mars was 4 years before this.
So yeah, like 2001, 2002.
Yeah. As a director, he literally jumped from Ghost of Mars in 2001 to The Ward in 2010.
Yeah. I kind of always just pretend I never saw The Ward.
Yeah. He hasn't directed a movie since a feature film since Ghost of Mars. 21 years ago. Carpenter's too busy, you know, enjoying playing video games and
smoking cigarettes
and taking points on stuff because of things he created. And good for him, man, because he's created some classics. And if he's going to finally really get paid for them, then good.
Yeah, me too. That's what I say. Here's the other thing. I'm not really mad at this Fog remake.
No.
That's the thing.
There's some times where we get remakes or sequels and you're thinking, why? Why are you doing this? And sometimes it does bring a little bit of anger, not anger, but like disappointed something, an elevated disappointment, or you're just kind of like, again, it's not anger. It's just, why? Can I just go back and watch the original again?
Right. I think it goes back to what we were saying. It's like, who asked for this?
Right.
It's a remake nobody asked for.
Right. The remake nobody asked for. We've talked about Graham Revell's score work before this, and it's usually really good. But this, I don't know if you don't hear a lot of cues in it.
You don't hear it, and when you do hear it, it sounds like it's from another movie.
Right.
I mean, honestly, there's nothing remarkable. Dude, one of the things I love, I just picked up the new vinyl, the Fog from...
Waxwork.
Yeah, Waxwork Records. Right. So I just picked up The Fog and I had just listened to it and I was like, God, this is such a good score. And then watching the movie last night, I'm like, is there a score? And I'm like, and when I did hear something, it just, I don't know, it was weirdly, like, just seemed like generic guitar riff. It almost like they were taking sound bites from Clapton's outtakes from Lethal Weapon 1 and 2.
When you hear the stuff in this, like you said, it feels like a different movie. It feels like he's just tuning up his guitar and warming up before he's waiting for the strings to get there. So he can, it feels so out of place. Give me shanty music. You know, I was like, I mean, that would feel more in tune, except for it's not a pirate movie.
Right.
Again, more confusion.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just keep it a pirate ghost? I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't either, man. And the thing is if you're going to do that, give me the scene where Hal Holbrook at least gives me everything and lets me know who Blake was and, you know, and gives me that whole thing.
Yeah.
They do a really bad job of explaining the whole thing. They kind of try to show it to you, which I'm more of a fan of usually is the show me, don't tell me.
Of course.
But something like this, you still have to tell the audience. Like if I didn't know, if I'd never seen the first Fog, I would have had even less idea what the fuck was going on in this fog.
Yeah.
I would have been in the fog.
And this Father Malone, all he does is run around and drink all the time. And then finally when everybody shows up, he's like, all right, well, here it comes.
And he looks like he could have gone to high school with Nick and Elizabeth and right. Stevie, right?
As opposed to Hal Holbrook.
Yes, as opposed to Hal Holbrook, who's like, you know, is perpetually 85 years old.
And can act circles around everybody in this movie.
Correct.
Yeah, dude, it's like weird. It's like all of a sudden, and I wonder like, well, yeah, dipshit, are you going to, I mean, is this guy going to, look, I don't care how expositional it is. This is why you're in this movie. Start talking.
But yeah, man.
I don't know.
Yeah, and when he does talk, he just sounds like he's wound up. Yeah. Like, there's like no like, I mean, I don't buy him, dude. He's, you know, to me, he looks like some guy who probably killed Father Malone and took his clothes.
Yeah.
Hey, do you guys remember what Father Malone looks like? No. Is that him? Sure. Recognize the collar.
And then got out the spray paint and started tagging things around the cemetery.
Yeah, right? Good Lord, dude. What a bad choice that was. I laughed out loud. And she's like, what happened? And he's like, oh, nothing. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it looks like the fucking local gangbangers are out tagging the fucking cemetery again. Because if you're telling, is that supposed to be the fucking pirate/pilgrim ghost did that?
I don't know.
I mean, come on, man.
I didn't realize they're big into graffiti.
No. Fuck that. That's one of the more goofy like moments that just like kind of was cringy.
Yeah, I laughed out loud, like literally laughed out loud how bad that was. Because it was like, wait, what a second. And then they show like a medium close-up insert or something that to show the paint all over his hands. I'm like, wait, are you doing it? Are you the one that's tagging the cemetery? Yeah, I realized I might just chalked it off as him just kind of putting his hand on it just to figure out what kind of material it was. It was paint or...
The one guy I do want to throw out there while we're talking about actors I don't want to forget is Jonathan Young, who plays Dan the Weatherman in this.
Yeah.
Dude, he nails it because he's exactly the same as Dan the Weatherman in the first one.
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, I feel like he's like, yeah, I'm going to study the way he delivered his line and he does it. He's perfect.
I'm just going to give it to you.
Yeah, I mean, look, I appreciate that. He knew he wasn't like, what was he going to do with that role? It wasn't like he was going to create like, hey, I'm going to create a new Dan the Weatherman character. So he just went for it. I mean, it's even almost shot the same, everything where she's like, don't open the door, Dan.
Well, you get a lot of that with Salma when she's in, that, if there was something that was most like the original is
those moments between the two of them.
Yeah,
100%. And most of her dialogue, you know, over the radio.
I love him sending her the webcam and her hooking it up. I thought was like a clever little way to kind of say what year it is. But then at the same time, they don't know what year it is because, wait, is it 1971 or is it 2005? Tell me.
Where's the 100 years?
Yeah. Yes.
Where are the 100 years?
Yeah, tell me. Okay, it's 2005. Let's roll back 100 years. So this is supposed to be. Yeah, it's very weird. It's very weird. And it's hard not to get around that when you're watching a movie like this, when you're throwing around window of time saying it's been 100 years and then you're saying 1871, I'm like, all right, well, explain yourself because that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It's one of those movies where they feel like, well, they've said, all right, here is what's true in the world that you're watching. And then I'm like, well, that contradicts whatever it is. It's going, well, I don't know, maybe that was the point. Maybe that was the point of them hiding stuff and no one really knows a damn thing. We really only know the 1871 thing because she finds the book. I don't know.
Right. And who? What was the date on the watch, right? Remember when she did, she's like, it tells you when it was made. And then like they clean that off and she looks at the symbols and I don't know how the fuck you would know what date it was made from those symbols. There's not one number.
Yeah.
You know, I guess maybe I should look up pocket watches and, you know, do some research.
Research.
The one thing about here's the thing, the cinematography in this movie. I hate all the day shots.
Yeah.
Hate them.
Yeah.
But the night stuff looks good for the most part.
Yeah.
All the night stuff.
Yeah.
The day stuff just looks too much like television. I guess is the best way to say it. that scene early on where we first meet Nick and Spooner with the two fishermen on the boat. And it's kind of like, dude, I felt like we were going to get a montage. it's almost a montage, right? Like the first part of it where he's talking to the fishermen, it feels like there's a montage coming on, which thankfully it doesn't. But right. That's the dumbest scene in the movie, where the boat almost flips over and the fish go out. We're going to go down. We're going down.
Yeah.
Because he's hooked on something with the, I mean, and if that's your guy that it's you and him and you trust that guy to drive. Come on, man. He seems to panic awfully quickly and do everything wrong with that fucking chain when he's trying to weigh that anchor.
He's quite the deckhand, isn't he?
It's not like he's your best friend. You didn't grow up with him.
Yeah, because he's from Chicago.
He's from Chicago. He doesn't know. He's no Matt Hooper.
No. And you know the best way to really have handled that was Jaws 2.
Yes.
The way they pull up the
telephone, the power line.
Yeah. I mean, him getting stuck, it would have been far more dramatic and far more effective if we never saw what it was that it was stuck on.
Yeah.
I understand because you want to say, oh, hair's stuck on that thing we saw in the beginning that you didn't
know. I still don't know what it is.
It's a sack of shit.
Like it was just like a sack of stuff, right? Like
right, the mirror
stuff from the boat,
the mirror, and yeah, that's that kind of shit.
But how did it all get in the sack, anyway? Is my question.
I don't know.
We've got to get everything off the ship before it goes down. Put it in the sack. Ah, too late. We're all dead.
Yeah, I don't know.
Was the table was in there too? It's chairs,
right? And you never see that. You know the four horsemen, if you will. They run off with all the gold.
Yes.
In the chest, right?
Right.
That is the thing about the original.
Who was the fifth horseman? The one who got fucking sucked into the water?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, they never made like, I fully expected like, why are they after me? I'm not even from here. I don't have anything to do. And that, you know, somebody would have been the descendant of the fifth person, who, you know, the one who didn't make it.
Right.
But no, that would have been too clever. That would have been too much to write into the script.
Right. And it wasn't Spooner's family.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not a Castle. He's not a Williams. He's not a Wayne, and he's not a Malone. That's all we know.
Yeah, that's all we need to know.
Cause he's not there's no statue of him.
Nope. One of my favorite parts in this movie is, well, it's the second funniest moment in the movie. It's when Aunt Connie.
Yeah. Poor Aunt Connie.
Poor Aunt Connie. It's not right. What? Well, I guess, you know, she's as guilty as anybody when it comes down to it. She's part of the Wayne family.
Yeah. That's what she gets.
Damn it.
I don't know. I thought that they could have done something really cool with that whole sink moment instead of doing the hand.
Yeah.
I would have, you know, I know there's lots of things I would have done differently about it, but it's not those little moments that are problematic. It's the, as a whole, it's like, this really is one of those movies where you're just.
It seems like a parody of a horror film.
It really does. And there's moments in there you're like the Spooner character. It's like that character that they talk about in Not Another Teen Movie. He's like, we're going to go ahead and put this black actor in here and he's going to have these lines that I don't know, they're going for comic relief. What are they doing?
I don't know. It's just weird. Like, you know,
it's so out of place. It's so out of place. And
they forget about him. Like for large chunks of the movie, he's like, you know,
they do.
He doesn't exist.
Okay. So when he's in the hospital, Spooner, and then some shit's going on with Maggie down the hallway where the other people that died on the boat when Spooner was out goofing off at night with the Matthew Curry Holmes. That moment in the hospital, while everybody's distracted with Maggie screaming down the hallway because Matthew Curry Holmes decides to be a zombie and gets up and walks over and starts hugging her or whatever the fuck he was doing. Spooner jumps out the window. We don't see it happen, but like they come back to his room and the room's empty and the window's open. I'm like, it took me a second to remember who was there. Like who was in the bed. I couldn't process that. I'm like, oh, that was Spooner. Like I didn't, they're like, oh yeah, he just must have jumped out the window when we weren't looking.
Right.
But like you're talking about, Spooner is, he disappears for long chunks of time. So even in that moment, I was like, wait, who was in the bed again? Oh, yeah, it was Spooner. Because he's in the movie so little and so rarely. I'm like, and again, why am I caring about him? When does he show up again after he runs away?
Right.
I don't know, dude. It's really weird the way what they. It was almost like, hey, you know what? We only got DeRay for 2 days, and we're gonna shoot around him. And by the time he came back to do his pickups, it was. I don't know, man.
Yeah, they were wildly over in their days, and yeah. You know, the fog wasn't working, and you were trying to figure out how to CGI enhance the practical fog that they had on set.
Yeah, so hey, Derek, go share your trailer there with the non-pirate ghosts over, and we'll let you know when we're ready for you.
Yeah, we'll come back for you. We'll come get you. We'll send somebody.
But I do feel like he might have some large chunks of material cut from the movie. Now there is an unrated and a rated version. One being 100 minutes, one being 103 minutes. I don't know what they could have put in this movie.
Weirdly enough. I'm going to ask you this question. Okay. So far, out of our sequels nobody asked for,
right,
being the two that we watched,
right,
this is the better one. Yes?
Well,
no.
Yeah, I mean,
for
I think we've already established that we've watched three, and it definitely is.
It's the best of the three.
Best of the three. Looking ahead of the other movies that we're covering, I've seen that one. I've only seen two of the last three.
Okay.
So out of the five, I had only seen two of the five. Or if you want to count the last one, six. Yeah, three of six. That's not very good, but that's actually good too. Because what we're doing is remembering better remembering the original. That I think it's something we've leaned on quite a bit between RoboCop and this.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we're right. Actually, that's already out, right? RoboCop and this is that. Yeah, we are making the comparison to the original because they are sequels nobody asked for, or remakes that nobody asked for. And yeah, but they do the comparisons. Now, RoboCop, we talked about, when you look at the budget of that, because of the fact that it's RoboCop and there's multiple sequels and a TV series that came out of whatever. And that RoboCop, they were looking franchise all over again. They were looking for an extension of that franchise with more sequels. That's how it was planned. This is just a flat out remake like they were doing in the early aughts. And this suffers from, let's hurry up and get this out. I felt like a lot of movies around that time, this kind of movie was like that.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of these sort. You know, the movie we're going to cover next week, I think, is another.
Yeah,
is another example of the, you know, sort of, let's get this made. You know, from the mid early aughts. You know,
right
with an interesting cast too.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be interesting. It'll be fun to talk about that next week, and you know, to actually revisit that because I haven't seen that movie since 2005.
And this is a good leader into that. I'm actually kind of glad that we decided to not cover the last one and do this one. It like you said, it's not, I don't want to say it's tofu. I think it's just poorly seasoned chicken or in case they're on island, it's poorly seasoned fish. I it's like, all right, okay. And there's enjoyable moments in there and stuff like that. And the comparison to the original is they took some key things that make the original fun. Cause with the original, when you get to that point where it's just like pirate ghosts and like, oh yeah. And it's like, again, I know it is a slow moving movie. It is, but it's still fucking great. It's still awesome. And this is just, I don't know. It's just like most remakes. It just pales in comparison and it just doesn't get everything right. Now that there's lots of things about next week's movie that I think are better than the original, as much as I like the original. But you've got, how rare is it for a remake of a well-known title, do they ever succeed with pleasing everybody or at least pleasing a larger audience than most? It doesn't happen very often. And unfortunately, this doesn't. It's did okay, all right? But man, I don't know, it could have been better, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like this movie could have been a lot better. But again, it could have been a lot worse. And like I said, when I texted you, I'm kind of House of Wax enjoying this.
Yeah, and I just wish, like you noted, I wish this had that bombastic ending that we get with the House of Wax remake.
Right, where they just go full bananas and they just go for it. And like, you know, the people are stepping in hot wax and shit. And you know that they're actually melting an entire set around these actors.
Yeah. But like you noted, the
end of this movie, the very end sequence is possibly, it almost ruins, well, you can't really ruin this, but I mean, it takes away, it lets you know exactly, if you're thinking, oh, hey, this wasn't so bad. Wait till you get to the end. You're going to be like, oh no, it's bad. But yeah. Was it worth the journey? Look, we've suffered through way worse movies than this.
Yeah.
Over this last 3.5 years.
Yeah. There's definitely worse movies than this. And the thing that, again, about any kind of remake is you kind of got to make it your own. And unfortunately, the parts that make it their own were the parts they shouldn't have changed.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a cover song, right? Like you're going to cover something, you know, do something different or, right. You know, or just be a cover band. But nobody wants a cover director. Am I glad that they made a remake of this? No.
No.
Would I have liked this movie more if I had never seen the original? Maybe. Would I like this movie more if it just wasn't called The Fog? Sure. Possibly.
Maybe. And you know, it's funny too, as much as I like Maggie Grace a lot, and just this also chalked us up to poor marketing. I didn't know she was in the movie until you said something to me.
Right. Well, it's funny, man. I forgot that she was in it until I went to put it on. I'm like, oh God, yeah, of course Maggie's in this. All I remembered about my initial viewing was that Selma Blair was Stevie Wayne and the kid from Lois and Clark.
Yeah, Smallville.
Smallville, you're right, was Nick Castle.
Right.
Which I think is that their big Easter egg that they named him Nick Castle? I mean, I know his name was Nick Castle, but isn't Nick Castle the guy who wrote the original Halloween with Carpenter? Isn't he the original Michael Myers?
Isn't he? Yeah. Anyway, there's lots of people in this movie that you don't recognize, lots of people that you recognize that are still working today, and badass women in it like Maggie and Selma. And I just, are things so sour with John Carpenter that is that why we didn't get an Adrian Barbeau appearance in this?
I don't know, man. I mean, we didn't get a Jamie Lee. Like Jamie Lee could have played Maggie's relative
says
spyglass. He's a spyglass.
Well, I mean, Adrian could have played Aunt Connie.
But I guess they didn't want to be that camp. Yeah, who knows?
I couldn't afford it.
$18 million budget. But this is 2005.
I know, but we already talked about how much did Carpenter and how much did Deborah Hill do in this movie. But if you're going to put that out there and if you're going to use that as marketing material, I mean, take the time to put these people in the movie.
But also, maybe it just gets too stunt casty. I mean, I might have hated all that had I seen it. You know what I mean? Like, in hindsight, like I was just looking and thinking, man, you know, Charles Cypher should have been in this movie. But no, I mean, look, otherwise I'll just watch the original if you're just going to pop up. You know, sometimes that's great. And then sometimes it's like, well, how many? I mean, look, if you put Atkins in as the beachcomber, I'm good.
Well, I mean, you don't think Adrienne would have been fine as Aunt Connie? She's not in it a lot, and she would have acted in it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it might have become too much of a thing. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I love what she, like, just recently, Adrienne was on Shudder's Creepshow, and she was great in it, too. And it's very Fog-related opening. And she's clever. I mean, she's awesome. I wish she would do more stuff. And I know, and she does that. I think she has a podcast that she's been doing for a little while. Radio show.
Just go back and watch. When was the last time you watched Carnival?
I love, and your Melody worked on that.
Yeah, Carnival's rad, dude.
Yeah. Anyway, it's one of those few times that we've done an episode where you can hear in our voice that without even listening to the words that we're saying, you can just hear our tone. It was just, like I said, unseasoned fish. Yeah.
I don't dislike the movie at all.
I don't dislike it either. It's like,
but again, what could I recommend it to somebody? I would have to recommend it to somebody with like, okay, like here's the thing going in. It's not good. But that being said, you might enjoy it for different reasons.
Yeah. And like I said, for a movie that kind of has if they would have fucked up on the fog effects, that would have been bad, but they look good. And I like, but you know, what's funny is like, and I meant to say this earlier when I was talking about how good the effects were. They're coming in so hard, right? They're coming out of nowhere going, 80, 90 miles an hour. This fog's coming at them. Even the music cue is setting up something that's going to be some seriously active violence was about to happen. But then it just stops. And I don't know. I just feel they build up to something that doesn't happen.
It's a jump scare.
Yes. Yeah,
it's a jump scare that doesn't make you jump.
It's a jump scare that of this fog movement.
It's a non-jump scare.
It's a non-jump scare jump scare. Yeah. Anyway, I want to also point out, too, that the director's name is Rupert Wainwright, not to be confused with Rufus Wainwright. But you know what that dude's claim to fame was?
Stigmata.
He did MC Hammer videos like crazy. He did, he did MC Hammer's Turn His Mother Out, which is his first single. But you know what else he did? NWA Straight Outta Compton video.
Yeah.
He's all music videos. He did NWA's Express Yourself, but he really did a lot of Hammer stuff. He did Too Legit to Quit. He did Adam's Groove. So he did that kind of stuff. Now, he also did...
He did Wolf Lake, dude.
Yeah. He did Wolf Lake.
He did. He directed a couple of episodes of Wolf Lake, which I gotta say, I secretly love. I wish it would have gone on for another season.
And then before Stigmata, he did a movie called The Sadness of Sex. Do you know what that is?
I do not.
Yeah, neither do I. It sounds intriguing, but then I'm like, why haven't we heard of it? It's on Tubi if you want to watch it. I'm not gonna, but there it is. But now now he just doesn't do anything. So.
Yeah, he counts his money.
Yeah, Rufus. You know. I mean...
Rupert?
Rupert. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to put... how lame is the cover for this thing?
That's bad box art.
The one sheet, it looks like...
Yeah.
Now, I've seen variations of this thing where you put... Where they're doing their whole... their screen cast Photoshop job at the bottom of it, but... I don't know, dude. Speaking of Photoshop and After Effects, God.
I've seen the same thing, but with fire. This exact same poster, but the face was made of fire.
Yeah. They'll do whatever it takes. Like, and if you look at the Stigmata one sheet is not much different.
No.
Yeah, you get Patricia's rad eyes. She's got killer eyes. Yeah. All right, then.
I think
we're going to dragging her ass through this. And there's nothing else to say.
No. We've said it all. I mean, yeah. Is it a remake that I necessarily wanted? No.
No.
But is it the worst of these sort of films we're going to talk about?
No.
Not even.
The Closer. I have not seen The Closer. I've had it for a long time. It's a Big Lots purchase. Not that that tells you anything. And I've been looking forward to watch it for a long time and had a lot of people recommending, why don't you watch that with edibles? All right. So when we get around to that one, that's how I'm going to do it. That's a big one. We intentionally picked of the five movies. Well, even this one, even though it was on the back burner, the first and the last one are movies that were highly anticipated. This, you know, the first one, you know, RoboCop, because it's a massive franchise and everybody loves the original. And the last one because of who's in it and what they were trying to do. And that'll be the fun one.
The Fog, 2005.
Yep.
Rufus Wainwright.
Rufus
Wainwright. Rupert Wainwright.
Dude, I almost feel like Rufus directing this would have been better. Him and Graham could have worked on some music together.
Or they just brought in Rufus, Rupert, and Graham and let them all just do their thing.
Let's do our
and
thing.
MC, you know, they should have gotten Hammer to record an original tune for the, over the end credits. You know, some sort of kick-ass rap tune over the fucking final credits of The Fog.
Called The Fog.
God.
Rupert's on the phone. You owe me, Hammer.
Hammer!
And what are you doing in 2005?
Don't hurt me, Hammer, but listen to me. Yeah. I need a song.
Do it. So you want to follow the show on the socials, you can follow us at Karate Pod on Twitter, Insta, and Letterboxd. If you want to follow Corey on Letterboxd, it's Corey_Culp. And on Instagram is Culprit97. And if you want to follow some other socials, another linkage, you can look at the bottom of our episode show notes under Karate in the Garage linkage, and you'll find everything there.
If you'd like to follow me on Instagram, I'm at rockandroller33. If you'd like to follow me on Letterboxd, I'm at Tom Cody on Letterboxd. If you'd like to follow me at Blue Sky, it's The Real John Ladd at Blue Sky.